Hello, my name is Kane. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 13th of 2008. And by the grace of God, I've got about 3.5 years sober. It's not by my own doing. The topic is the family afterward. And I'm going to read a little something that sticks out to me real quick out of the book. This painful past may be infinite value to other families still struggling with their problem. We think each family which has been relieved owes something to those who have not, and when the occasion requires, each member of it should be only too willing to bring former mistakes, no matter how grievous, out of their hiding places. Showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the thought, in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession we have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. You know, I come from a very dysfunctional home of alcoholics and addicts. You know, my life was definitely very uncomfortable at a very young age. I don't believe I had a together family ever at any point in time. Holidays were definitely a struggle because I either had my mom or I had my dad. Never had them in one place at one time. And if I did, it was not for very too long. No, my mom and dad don't get along still to this day. No, my father's also in the program. He got sober before I did. And I think if it wasn't for him, I don't think I would have made it in here, or at least I wouldn't have stayed. You know, my alcoholism took me to a lot of places. You know, it was very unmanageable. The state of California decided where my life was going to go for a long time. I spent about 15 years of my life in and out of jail and prison, 2 weeks after I turned 18, all the way until I was 32 years old. So I guess you can say I missed out on a lot of my family. Missed out on a lot of my things with my kids. And today that has all changed due to a direct result of 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and a God of my own understanding. When I came in here, I did not want to get it sober whatsoever. I just wanted to get the heat off. They told me if I go to a 5-month residential treatment program, I could get off early, off parole, and they revoked that for me 4 months into it. And I was resentful. Like I said, I had no intention on getting sober. I wanted to leave so many times, but my father worked at the treatment center that I was in, and I didn't want to let him down. You know, and I told him at one point I wanted to leave, and he really messed with my head really bad. He says, if you have to go, son, he says, go. He says, I love you very much, and I support you 100% in whatever it is you do. And I wanted him to beg and plead for me to stay, and he told me the exact opposite, and it really messed up my head really bad, and so I stayed. I stayed for a long time. I was at that treatment center for about 14 months instead of the 5 that I was supposed to be there. You know, on the topic of the family afterward, the family that I have today is amazing. Today I'm a father, and I'm proud to be a father. I have 2 boys, and I have a little girl who I call my own as well. You know, and I get my oldest son every other weekend. It took me taking his mom to court, which was something I never thought I was going to step into another room again. And my sponsor helped me get through that, because that was painful. That was the last thing I wanted to do. And still to this day, his mom holds this resentment towards me, and that's one relationship I don't think I'll be able ever to fix unless she comes into the rooms, because she's still practicing. My youngest son, who's going to be 11 years old next month, I didn't get to meet him until he was 8 years old. You know, they weren't sure whether or not I wanted to be a part of his life after I got out of prison. And parole allowed me to take a travel pass and go and be there for his 8th birthday. And I've been out there every year since for his birthday. And I'll be out there next month for his birthday again this year. They talk about not getting into a relationship early in recovery. I got into a relationship before I got sober, because I had a month to run around before I got into that treatment center. So I drank like any good alcoholic all the way up until I got into that treatment center. And the funny thing about it, the girlfriend that I have, we used to party together. And today we're both clean and sober. And that's by the grace of God. The relationship I have with my father, you know, I used to think my father was the worst person ever, and that I would never grow up to be like my father. I'd never do to my kids what my father did to us. All the broken promises, all the I'll be there for you. And I walked right in his footsteps. You know, and I was a spin image of my father to the core. You know, and today I'm proud to call him my father. You know, I thought that was something I'd never be able to do. And the relationship I have with him is one I never had when I was growing up, because all we did was party together. He wasn't there in my childhood, and then it just became a partying buddy. We drank all the time together. The relationship with my mom, that's still iffy. You know, she's still out there practicing. But all I can do for her is pray for her, you know. And one day I hope she will get it, and I can just be a good example of a good example. And she knows where there's help, and she knows where to find it. My oldest son lives in an alcoholic home, and he says he doesn't want to live at home, and that pains me very bad. Because all the times that I wasn't there over the years, you know, the times that I should have been there for him, and I wasn't. But today I can be there for him. And he loves spending time with his dad, and that's amazing to me. I didn't think anybody ever wanted to spend time with me, and because I was so busy messing up everybody's lives, tearing everything I could up. I was a user of people, taker of things. That's the way I lived my life for many years. But today, I love to give. It's not about receiving anything in return, because this is not a program of getting something back. It's for me giving back for the life that I've been given today. You know, my sponsor told me in the beginning, he says, I can't guarantee you that your life will get better, but it'll get different. It got different and it got better in so many ways. You know, the life that I have today is one beyond my wildest dreams, and everything that I've ever wanted or thought that I wanted, I've gotten today. And anything I get after that is just a bonus. You know, for anybody who's new, anybody who's suffering, that has a problem with their families, think that they can't get it back, and that things can't get repaired, it can. I'm here to tell you that it's possible. You know, I never thought it was. I'm glad I have you guys as a family. You know, I grew up where we're running with gangs with my family, and that was the only way that I felt accepted. You know, because I didn't have that sense of belonging at home. And then I come in here at Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have a family. A huge family. No matter where I go, I feel at home. You know, I came all the way out here from California, and I've never been to Arizona before. I've been more places sober than I ever had when I was out there. And it's amazing. I love this. And I wouldn't give this away for the world. You know? So if there's anything that you've gotten out of my share today, get a sponsor. Get a big book. Work the steps. I can't guarantee you that your life will get better, but it'll get different. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Thank you. Please welcome our second speaker, JP from Fricky Paw.
My name is JP. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, JP.
Apparently, I don't live anywhere. I'm just from Fricky Paw. I do currently reside in Centennial, Colorado, if anybody cares.
Sorry.
I guess, you know, I was born out in Kansas City, moved to Denver when I was four. My dad got a job out there. During this time, I'm not going to get too much into this, and you'll hear me talk a lot about my dad, which is a big part of it. I had a very, very loving, codependent Al-Anon mom, but my dad was a great alcoholic, and I love saying that, you know, alcoholism didn't run in our family, it galloped, or at least on his side of the family. I was taught at a young age like how that stuff was kind of how my life tools with that. I had a grandfather who was a very, very bad alcoholic, and he was the type that taught us how to swim by throwing us in the lake when we were 6 months old. You know, and he you know, if you did something wrong, like, he just knocked you upside the head at 3, 4, or 5 years old. I remember I kicked my cousin Corey in the nuts one time when we were fighting, and my grandpa beat the shit out of me. And I was like 6 years old. And it's like, that's kind of what I understood about the alcoholism from there. And then at home, you know, things were a little different. You know, like I feel for me that talking about the family afterward, for me, I understand today that as parents, it is our job to do better than what our parents did for us. And I know that my dad did an extraordinary job at that. My mom did an extraordinary job at that. And I didn't have a terrible childhood. I'm not one of those people who was like abused all the time or anything like that. Like that stuff took place in the house. It wasn't all the time. It was a lot more emotional abuse, but it wasn't this like kind of horrible thing all the time. What it was though is my perception of it when I was a child, and that's what was bad. There was something askew from the beginning, and a lot of it was. My dad was drunk. For those of you who don't know, my dad's sitting over here right now, and wave your hand. Thanks, Eddie. I had those weird perceptions when I was a kid. I slept on my back because I was just terrified that my dad was going to come home and whoop my ass when he got home drunk. That never once happened, ever. I don't even know where I got that idea from. But that's the kind of stuff that that happened. And I knew that pretty much every night, no matter how bad it was, when I woke up in the morning, everything would be different. Because he was hungover and not still drunk. And like, so things were different with that. When I was 8, he got sober. And this is kind of where things like really changed, because I was 8, so like I was still just a kid. And then when I got to when I got a little bit older and I started, you know, drinking and using at probably about 11, then it wasn't so cool anymore that he was in AA. You know, he knew everything I was doing all the time. It drove me insane. I didn't have to say anything or do anything. He just knew. And it was absolutely miserable as a teenager with a parent who was in recovery. I mean, he always knew what was going on. To make a long story short, I get up here. I want to read one part real quick out of here. It says on page 122, it says, years of living with an alcoholic is almost sure to make any wife or child neurotic. The entire family is, to some extent, ill. Thanks. So obviously that's the reason I'm an alcoholic. Has nothing to do with the way that my body reacts to alcohol. It's that my dad was an alcoholic and I was neurotic. You know, on a real note, what happened is he got sober and I went off. And as I was to just fast forward, like it was, like I said, he knew what was going on most of the time. He did his best with me. I had one of my best friends was stabbed to death when I was 16 over a $20 bag of pot. Now, probably a little bit of a lesson there to be learned, I'm sure. I did not learn anything from that, however. And so I just kind of kept going on with what I was doing. And by the time I was 22, I was a wreck. I got arrested with a quarter pound of meth and a loaded 45. The cops in Denver don't like that at all. And they were they put me in a jail, and I had a Touch My Monkey shirt on, also not pleasant. My dad came down, and I remember sitting on the other side of the glass crying, you know, like, I don't want to do this anymore, and just please get me out, you know, and like all that stuff. And I got out, and I was like, you know, it was one of those kinds that I got out and I just bolted as soon as I got out. And and what happened for me is that that about 2 months later, I got a call from my lawyer, who said, he just said, "What are you doing?" And for the first time in my life, I was honest, and I said, "I don't know." And he said, "I think you should go to rehab." And I was like, "Okay, that sounds like a good idea." And I don't know how to get there, but he said, "Well, will your dad help?" And I said, "I'll call him and ask." You know, and I called him, and he said, "Yeah, if you come home right now, I'll take you to rehab." And so I loaded up the girl that I was with and all the drugs that I had and got in the car and went home. And he let all that stuff for one night, and the next morning everything was gone. And it was like, it got real quick. And I'll never forget, I don't remember exactly what he said, but I'll never forget walking into the garage. And he was walking in the garage door in front of me, and he turned around and he said, "I'm really glad that you're here, because I just wanted to let you know that there is a God and everything's going to be okay." And at the time, I didn't even know that that was important. I was like, whatever, dude. Like, you and your God thing. I didn't know that was important at the time. And it turns out he was absolutely right. Sometime during that time, in between the going to jail and actually getting sober, I went to this meeting, his home group meeting, and we're sitting in there, and like, you know how you go in when you're new, especially like me. I mean, I had been up for 6 years and we'd been drunk around the clock, and I was like really tired and I didn't want to be in there. And you know how you go in there and like paranoid, you think everybody's talking about you because they're telling your story and all that stuff. I go in there and like, that's what he starts talking about me in the meeting, literally. And so like other people in there are sharing in the meeting, and they're like, you know, they're talking about me. And I'm right here, guys. You know? Like, I had to get up and go out and smoke and like try to, gather myself out there. I had no idea what was going on, and I was still high at the time. So that was terrifying to me. Like, when everybody says it, I thought everybody was talking about me in the meeting. They really were once. What happened, though, is that there was this woman in there, and her name is Dorothy, and she's like, got 100 years sober or whatever. And she said, "John," that's my dad's name, John. She said, "John, what I want you to know is that it's your job to be here for our kids, and we'll make sure to be here when your son gets here." And I've held on to that from the time that I heard her say it. Because that's my job today. My job today is to be here for everybody else and be here for everybody else's kids. So if I ever have kids and this happens, I know that there's going to be an undiluted message in Alcoholics Anonymous for them to hear. And like, that's what's important to me today. Today I have a girlfriend who has a kid, so I have a built-in family. And it's been a whole lot different. Like the last 9 months, all of a sudden I went from, and like, I'm 31, I mean, it seems a little bit late in life to be doing this to me, with a 2-year-old running around, and I'm like, oh my God, this is a lot of work, But the biggest thing with that is that today I get to practice these principles, and I get to understand that like when it talks about that stuff about having an alcoholic parent who makes the child neurotic, we don't have to do that today with her. Today we get to love her unconditionally and like let her know that, and that there's no strings attached. We just get to be there and show up and like let this kid have the most awesome experience that she can have. And it's up to her whether or not she has that experience. It's not up to us. I do want to read one more thing real quick. It says, "Another principle we observe carefully is that we do not relay intimate experiences of another person unless we are sure he would approve. We find it better, when possible, to stick to our own stories. A man may criticize or laugh at himself, and it will affect others favorably. But criticism or ridicule coming from another often produces the contrary effect. Members of the family should watch such matters carefully, for one careless, inconsiderate remark has been known to raise the very devil. We alcoholics are sensitive people." No. It takes some of us a long time to outgrow that serious handicap. And today, like, that's kind of one of the things that like I really believe today, is that we are sensitive, and the problem is that so is everybody else, not just we alcoholics. And so I have to watch what I say, like not just the family afterward, but my family, my fellow humans. And I need to be cautious about that, and I need to be careful about what it is that I say and what I talk about and how I say it. And that starts at home. I'm a firm believer that, you know, I get sponsees. I've had two sponsees who are considerably older and who had families. And, you know, their immediate reaction is that they want to come in and, like, start going to meetings every night and taking a coffee position here and a chair stacking position there and, you know, another service commitment here. And usually what what I usually talk to them about is, like, why don't you go home and be of service to your family first? Because that's what's important here. Like, it says in the book, it says 10 or 20 years of hard drinking would make a skeptic out of anyone. Right, like I expected my family to just know, like, well, I'm sober now. Geez, like it's been 3 months. don't you know that I'm serious? I'm not lying anymore. But it was 10 years of like everything else before that, you know. And I expect people just to understand and know that. And that's not the case today. Like that's how we rebuild these relationships. I've had a hard time with my mom. My mom was in this like serious denial, And it's been a really hard struggle with her because the first time I made a direct amends to my mom, like, she wasn't ready to hear it. And, like, I'm still not certain that today she's really ready to hear the amends that I have to offer her. So the best that I can do, and Lindsay talked about this a lot last night, but the best that I get to do is I get to show up and I get to be a part of, and I just get to show up for her. And, like, that's probably the best that I can do. How am I doing on time?
You have 3 minutes.
Okay. So I think that that's probably the most important thing that I do today is that I show up. I show up when I'm asked to. I try to do the best that I can. I have too many service commitments, which means it's probably just enough. And you know, it's a struggle. It's a struggle at home. It's a struggle at the service. It's a struggle with work. It's a struggle with everything. You know, because that's how I perceive it. And then when I just show up and start doing it, none of it's really a struggle. And I don't really have a problem with it. And so I think that for me, this family afterward is like, really for me, it's just part of the ninth step. I mean, it really is. Like, it's how I show up and behave with my family as I move forward. And that's really the best way that I can describe it, I think, it's part of my ninth step. It's part of me continuing to learn and grow. It takes part with like 10, 11, and 12 and how I'm acting in my life and whether or not I'm talking to people about that kind of stuff and whether or not I'm praying and meditating, because I don't want to show up not being centered at all. Like, I'm no use to anybody if I'm doing that. I love that the book talks about you can't transmit something that you don't have, right? But you will transmit what you do have. You know, like, I want everybody to remember that. You know what I mean? If your life is a shit show, like, that's what you're going to transmit to everybody. You know, it's like, it may not be 100% clear on that part. We can't transmit what we don't have. If we haven't been through the steps, if we haven't taken those steps and found a connection with a God and, like, done all this stuff necessary that we have to do for us to stay sober, we can't transmit that to someone else. But what we do have, we're going to. And that's, again, goes back to where I was talking about how we, you know, how I show up and, like, how I make sure that I try to be centered and I try to show up in the best way possible. And I fail miserably at it all the time. You know, but the point is that I keep trying to do it. So I think that's all I got tonight. Thanks. Or today.
Thank you. Please welcome our third speaker, Allison from Tucson. Thank you. I'm Allison. I'm an alcoholic. Well, Alcoholics Anonymous is a big, big, giant miracle, and I am so glad that we all get to be a part of it. And I love sitting in a room with people that look like degenerates. It makes me really glad that we're all here. And thank you for your share. Definitely the miracle is taking place in your lives, and I love that. Thanks to the committee for asking me through Eddie, and I really appreciate that. I grew up in a normal family. They were all alcoholic. We were sometimes disgustingly antisocial and Italian, and we drank and we fought and had big Sunday dinners. And I And I don't remember a time that alcohol was not in our lives. I don't remember a time that it wasn't just a part of our culture, you know, and what we did on Sunday dinners, you know, or the fact that we owned a bar and that helped, you know. it was easy access. I don't think that my reaction to life was proportional to what happened to me and my family. And that was when I really got that was the turning point for me to start healing the relationships in my family. Now, I mean, I have the litany of things that happen in some alcoholic homes. There was a lot of abuse. There was sexual abuse. There was inappropriate behavior. There was just the 500 million things that you could just pull out a psychology book and go, ta-da, you know, this is what happens. But my reaction to life was still never proportional to that. It just wasn't. And that was, I don't know. I don't know, and I really don't care all of the things that quantify that psychologically and or physiologically. But I know what alcohol did for me, and it made it okay to be in my skin, you know. And the statistics are, the good news and the good statistics are that I have three siblings. The youngest of us in sobriety just celebrated 21 years, and that's my brother. And, you know, we've all gotten to stay here. I got here the first time at 13, foisted into Alcoholics Anonymous through an institution. And because I wanted to get off the lockdown ward, and that, you know, they were bringing meetings in, and that seemed like a good place for me to go. And I was sitting across the room from this woman who shared my story, and she looked like she was about 65, and she's probably my age now. And she and she looked tore up from the floor up, and shared my story, you know, and said the things that nobody else had said. I love the reading your mail thing, because that was, you know, she read me like a cheap novel. It wasn't just my mail. She was like, mm-hmm, I know exactly who you are. And she was the first person to ever do that. And, you know, and then subsequently the siblings kind of trickled in. At that same time that I was in that institution, our oldest sister was in a treatment center for anorexia bulimia, and then followed a boy into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. We get here how we get here, you know. Like she needed to find her way, and it was through that vehicle and that, you know, whatever. But you know, it was just the you break it all down, and it was just the family of destruction. And you know, my mom, my father drowned in Lake Tahoe because he drank himself into, you know, the lake, and didn't make it to the shore. And you know, it just kind of imploded on us, this disease of alcoholism. And you know, the good news was is that for some reason, and I don't know why, the opportunity presented itself through the vehicle of human beings that were sober like you guys, and they came in and shared their message in that institution, and in the same in a different institution that my oldest sister was in. And through that, my mother got the opportunity to go to Al-Anon. And you know, thank God she did, man, because if one more person had enabled me or any of the rest of us, we would all be dead today. And we weren't the kind that, like, went by ourselves, you know. We, like, took people with us. And we all get to stay here and, you know, and be sober. And I think, you know, and we're all active. We didn't take ours and, like, go be in life, you know. Like, we're awesome now and sober. Like, we give back. And I identified with the, you know, like, I too felt like, I'm sober. Ta-da! Like, you know, I'd like to thank the Academy. You know, I just totally felt like that. And, you know, it wasn't that easy. My siblings, my other sister, she and I are 18 months apart, and she's today my best friend. But she shares openly when she pitches that she would not have crossed the street to spit on me if I was on fire. And that's where we were. There was so much damage in our family and so much destruction. And it took a long time. We were in the same home group for 3 years and we didn't talk, you know. And we sat on opposite sides of the room and fist fought in the parking lot. But, you know, she... both of us found our families in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I needed that. I needed to have a mommy and daddy in here. You know, I was 16 when I came back and stayed from that point on, and there was a lot that happened between that time, you know, but I got to come back, and I needed the women that would get 2 inches from my face and love me until I could love myself, you know, and just like, don't touch me. But I needed that. Like, I needed those women to just say the things that I needed to hear. You know, I wasn't, not everybody gets sober that way, and I don't, we don't have unanimity of thought. It's about unity, you know, and there's a difference. And not everybody could get sober the way that I got sober. You know, it was a sit-down, shut-up variety, and I had, you know, shared my fill of the disease, and they had had enough. And I'm grateful for that. I needed that, you know, I had that ego that would kill me and take some other people with me, and I needed them to tell me the truth about myself, and they did, and then lead me piecemeal, you know, line by line, page by page, through a spiritual awakening as the result, you know, of the steps in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's exactly what they did. And that happened for my family. You know, that's exactly what happened. And it was about, it took us, you know, with my mother, I was institutionalized in my first year of sobriety because I tried to kill her and I got caught. And I was, you know, shuffled away and spent my first year of recovery in an institution, you know. And that was how I processed my feelings. And talk about sensitive, like, we're a sensitive lot, you know, you know, like, that was, you know, I just love that line and that in the family afterwards is just so awesome and totally apropos. And I love it that they call it a handicap, because it is clearly, like, not just defect of character, handicap, there's a difference. And I definitely, that had me, you know, and I got to fly back 2 years sober after having gone through the process of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and found a God of my understanding and the beginnings. I made a beginning, as it talks about, and sit down face to face and make amends to her, you know, and I don't know, that's the only place that I know that stuff goes down is here in these rooms, you know, where I get to make amends to the woman that I tried to kill, you know, and face to face. And we have this awesome relationship. I just spent about an hour talking to her on the way up, you know, and she's like, she, you know, works an Al-Anon program, and I get to practice the principles in my relationship with her. And I don't know how much time is left.
You have 5 minutes.
Okay. I think the thing that impacts me the most is coming from the destruction of what our family was. And I, you know, barely skimmed the surface of what it looked like to be in my family. That today we have these, like, profound relationships rooted in AA, you know, and almost all of us have children. And, you know, I have no delusions that my two little boys are being raised in an alcoholic home today. You know, I've been sober for 22 years. My husband's been sober for 16. And they're still being raised in an alcoholic home. But it's a sober alcoholic home. And every day we both try to get up and be a channel of God's will and try to help them, these little beautiful little cherubic devils, into a relationship with God. Because we're not so finite that we don't get it. Like, you know, I get it. Like, this isn't about me. And hopefully, no matter what, they have a place to go, you know. And my nieces and nephews are in the same place. You know, we all pray for that, and we actively talk about it. And I know without a shadow of a doubt that I would damage those boys beyond all repair if I was a practicing alcoholic mother. I know it. I know what I do when I drink and what that looks like. And today I have this beautiful little 5-year-old and 10-year-old, you know. My 5-year-old got a timeout, you know, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, and he he was clearly wrong. And he came down to me and he said, can I tell you my feelings? Like, you know, mm-hmm. I was just so, like, this little, you know, angel face. And I was like, totally, tell me your feelings. You're still wrong, but tell me your feelings. Like, you know, that's not how it went down in my family, you know, at all. And he did, you know, like, I love that they can do that. I love that my 10-year-old can come home, like, freaked out because there were kids smoking in the park, you know. Not cool. Like, it's awesome. Like, I was like, you're right, not cool. You know, like, I just love that. Like, their experience is so different, you know. And when I was 10, I wasn't worried about, I was them smoking in the park, and it wasn't a cigarette, you know, something else. And I just love that. Like, they're whole human beings today. And we have our challenges, and it's real. It's the real deal. Like, nobody said I'd get anything else but that. Like, real life. Life on life's terms. Ta-da! Like, you know, here you are. And that's what it's been. It's been the ups and downs, ebb and tide of life. And I'm so grateful for that, and I really appreciate you allowing me to share a little bit of it with you. Thanks. All right. Okay, so now that we have plenty of time left over, does anyone have any questions for the people, for our panelists? Feel free to raise your hands. Whatever.
Hi, Wendy, you're so awesome.
You're awesome.
Yes, why are you so awesome?
Okay. You said that your mother was still in active tradition.
Absolutely.
I struggle with the same thing with my father, and I was just wondering, like, you know, a part of me does have to make amends to him. Like, I wasn't there for so long, I didn't even call to let him know I was okay. Like, how do you, what you do, like, how do you deal with that?
When I first got sober, my mom knew that I was going to get sober. I got in a fight with her on Mother's Day in 2008, and she was trying to tell me that she was clean and sober, and I knew otherwise. And I went home and I drank a fifth of Jose Cuervo to the face, thinking that I could wash away the pain and the misery that I felt over the argument, and that I couldn't get drunk. That was my turning point for me, and no matter how much I drank, I couldn't wash away the pain that I felt. And I got into a rehab, and after I was around for a little bit, I started talking to my mom a little bit. Asked her if she wanted to go to a meeting with me. Asked her if she wanted to see what it is that I do, how my life has changed, because she's seen it in my everyday life, how things were getting different. But I couldn't force it down her throat. I made my amends to my mom, and she clearly stated to me that you can pay me all the money that you owe me now. And I go, okay, Mom, when you open up the big book and you see, where it says that I need to pay you back anything in part of the amends, when you get to the amends part, you let me know. You read the book, you work the program, you tell me where it says that I owe you money. And I said, I can't do that right now. But this is my time to clear my side of the street. And all I can do is pray for you. And when you need help, I'll be here for you. As long as I'm still here, there will be help for you. And I'll be more than happy to guide you anywhere you need to go. But as far as enabling her, I can't do that today. You know, it pains me to death. My mom's homeless right now. And by me giving her money or me doing anything for her, she's on a fixed income. So she has money coming in. But she doesn't take the opportunity to do something with it. She'd rather sit and go dumpster dive, sit and isolate in her storage. You know? That's her priority. I know for myself, all I can do is pray and hope that she finds this one day. Because she knows what it's like. I used to take her home with her every Monday. She did that for, what, 3 or 4 months? And then she stopped. But my advice to you is all you can do is be an example of an example.
Find myself talking to my dad about a lot of things.
talk about how your relationship with your father's drugs since you got sober.
I guess one thing I didn't say is that I got sober June 24th, 2002, so I got a little over 9 years. My dad was 14 years sober when I got sober. And our relationship sucked when I got sober. I mean, I got kicked out of the house all the time. I had to go stay with my sponsor. He knocked me out in the garage one day in front of my cousin. I mean, it wasn't good. A lot of it, though, was me. I gotta be honest about that. I was an asshole and I didn't have any tools for living. What's happened, though, is that my dad's turned into one of my best friends. And we do all kinds of things together. We go hang out, we go to different places, we travel together, we fly together. What's changed mostly in that is me. And like being able to show up and to be a part of. I just didn't do that before, and I know what you mean by it. I wish there was a lot more. When I was 4 years sober, no, I guess I was 2 years sober, or something like that, somewhere around there, two or three years sober, he went in for a nuclear stress test and ended up having to have a bunch of stents put in his heart. And it was like the first time that I had been faced with the fact that my parents are mortal and could actually die. And I remember going into his office and saying, you know, like, I haven't learned everything I'm supposed to learn from you yet. And I like freaked out and started crying, and I just didn't know. And he was like, well, that's how it always is, right? We never learn all that we're supposed to learn from the people that we care about the most, you know. And so that's kind of how it went for me. It's just continued to get better and better. And like I had some shit go on about 6 months ago where I called him. He was the first person that I called. I didn't call my sponsor, I didn't call my friends, I called my dad. Because like I needed to talk to my dad. And like it's not something that I normally do, but that's what I did. And he walked me through it as a member of AA and as my father. And so that's how it's changed for me. I mean, I guess, is there any more that... No, okay. Or does that pretty much sum it up?
Carrie, I don't know. GP, you talked about your mom briefly and like that you don't think she's ready for the amends that you have to offer her, but have you like tried or have you done anything? Are you making like a living amends? Like how have you approached your relationship with her?
Yeah, what I was saying by that is that she, you know, like I'm just her baby, you know, and that's really all that it is. And like I talked to her about some of the stuff that happened and like what went on and what harm I really caused her, and it just doesn't even like go into her brain. It just literally goes in one side and out the other. She just doesn't hear it because she just doesn't think that I could have done those things. And so that's kind of what I meant by that. By living different, absolutely. Like nowhere really in the book does it talk about a living amends, but it does talk about how we live differently. Like that's part of the amends process, obviously. And so that's what I do. I do my best with that. And with my mom, it is a constant struggle. Like she is probably the nicest lady on the planet. She doesn't have an evil bone in her body. And she drives me bonkers all the time. You know, I get on the phone with her and I'm just like, you know? So like, that's how I try to act different. I try not to scream at her on the phone. And so yes, absolutely. I try to live different. And if she's ever ready for that, like I talked to my sponsor about it. I've recently, about 9 months ago, got a new sponsor and I talked to him about it. And like, I've talked to all my sponsors about it. And that's just kind of how it is. Like, I offer the direct amends when I was able to, and if she's ready to hear it again, I will. I'm always ready to do it.
Thank you. Are there any more questions?
Well, maybe we can hear from John's dad.
Okay, I have asked a friend, Dan, to close with the third step promises. Yeah, you can come up here.
My name's Dan, alcoholic.
Dan.
The third step promises. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or hereafter. We were reborn. Thanks.
Thanks, Dan.
May you please help me close this meeting with the Lord's Prayer.